Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Interesting news on the jobs and health care law front today. The Congressional Budget Office predicts the equivalent of 2.5 million fewer full-time workers in the workforce by a decade from now because of the Affordable Care Act. This may not be bad, however. The projection is that fewer people will choose to work just to hold on to health insurance because they'll be able to afford it on the exchanges. Employers, however, may also hire more part-timers and avoid the employer mandate to cover full-time workers that way. So we'll talk now about the implications of this and the ongoing long-term unemployment problem, including for older workers who have been hit harder than younger ones by long-term unemployment. On Friday, President Obama met with some corporate CEOs from Apple to Walmart to ask them to do what he asked for generally in the State of the Union address regarding the long-term unemployed.
They need our help right now, but more important, this country needs them in the game. That's why I've been asking CEOs to give more long-term unemployed workers a fair shot at new jobs, a new chance to support their families. And in fact, this week, many will come to the White House to make that commitment real. Tonight, I ask every business leader in America to join us and do the same, because we are stronger when America fields a full team.
The president from the State of the Union will get two takes now. First from Peter Coy of Bloomberg Businessweek. Then we'll hear about some new awards honoring age-friendly workplaces created by the New York Academy of Medicine. Peter Coy from Bloomberg Businessweek, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on, as always.
Let's start with long-term unemployment, Peter. How much was the president urging those CEOs on Friday to hire older workers when he talks about the long-term unemployed?
Well, I think he's really, really right to focus on long-term unemployment. The idea that the elderly are disproportionately affected is true, but I think the White House went out of its way to say that this affects all age groups. And in some ways, the problem with the older workers is that people just conclude, okay, they're never going to get another job and we can pass them over. And they end up going into premature retirement, involuntary retirement. For younger workers, in some ways the problem is even bigger because they cannot get on the career ladder in the first place. So, you know, the younger people coming up after them, coming out of college, leapfrog right over them into the jobs. And so here they are, maybe only in their 20s or 30s, can't even get a start on a career.
And the stats that I've seen on long-term unemployment, and I read part of last year's Urban Institute report, and brushing up for this, I read your article on this about a year ago, seem to show that it's pretty spread out among different demographics in general by race and education, for example, but that being older is a particular risk factor. How much is that known to be the case?
It's definitely a risk factor, just because, as we said, a Northeastern University, a very clever study by a guy named Rand Gaya, he sent out fake resumes to a bunch of employers, and he in some cases he said, you know, still working. In other cases he said, been unemployed for a short time. In other cases, unemployed for a long time. And he found that employers, with everything else being constant, passed right over the people who were in long-term unemployment, just treated them as damaged goods. So if you add on to that the fact that some of them are older, it's just a double whammy, and it just knocks them right out of contention.
Now, this projection about the Affordable Care Act and the workforce from the Congressional Budget Office is nuanced. 2.5 million fewer full-time workers in the next 10 years doesn't necessarily mean employers are offering less hours of work. It looks like a little more lifestyle choice for some workers, but also a shortage of full-time positions for others as employers try to avoid that mandate for the full-time workers. Is that how you read this?
I agree with you, although I wouldn't use the phrase lifestyle choice because that makes it sound like, you know, yuppies who are choosing to, you know, cruise a little bit. Most of the people who are being affected by this are low-wage workers, and they are people who are clinging to jobs because they need the health care insurance. And what the CBO, which is, of course, is a nonpartisan organization, is predicting is that a good number of them are no longer going to be tied to their jobs by the need for health care insurance. So this would include older people. Now we're talking about the flip side of the thing we just discussed. Older people who prefer not to work, maybe because they're sick, they have to, so they might go into early retirement. Young mothers, for example, who are, again, clinging to jobs because they need the health care insurance, now would be able to spend more time at home. So it's, as you say, it's nuanced. It's not purely a bad thing that there'd be fewer hours worked.
Also on the upside, I've always thought that if insurance is detached from the workplace, that people who hold on to dead-end jobs primarily for the insurance might be more able to take some other risks in the workforce as freelancers or entrepreneurs, and it might actually enhance innovation.
Yes, I think that's true. And even if they're not entrepreneurs, but they simply feel the freedom to go searching for a job that's more suitable to them, you get what economists call better job matching, which tends to increase efficiency and output.
There does also seem to be a potential welfare effect, though, from what I heard in a report on NPR today that said some lower-income people getting subsidized policies might avoid taking full-time jobs because it wouldn't be worth it to lose their health insurance subsidies under the new act. I don't know if that will be many people, but the subsidies, you know, leave them with a real health insurance bill to pay in most cases, so it's not like they'd be completely freeloading, but they get subsidies, and maybe the balance of the decision-making would change for some people as to whether to work or at least work full-time.
I think that's true. And this act on the whole, the CBO makes a very important point, which is that these changes will benefit employees at the expense of employers. For example, just the very fact that there's less of a labor supply because people are choosing not to offer their labor to the market.
Yeah, could push wages up, right?
Push wages up at the margin. At the low end we're talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, this is similar to the effect of raising the minimum wage.
Peter Coy, economics editor for Bloomberg Businessweek. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And with us next, Ruth Finkelstein, Senior Vice President of Policy and Planning for the New York Academy of Medicine. She directs the Age Smart Awards program created by the Academy with the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. They'll present the awards at a ceremony here in the green space tomorrow. Dr. Finkelstein, or do you say Stein?
Finkelstein.
Stein. Okay. Thanks for coming on and welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Why are you creating these awards?
You know, we started the Age-Friendly New York City project by talking to older adults, thousands of them around the city. And one of the dominant themes that we heard over and over again was people's desire to stay active and engaged in their workplaces. This meant both to work and to stay connected with their colleagues and to stay professionally vital and alive. It was one of the findings that we had the fewest tools to act on immediately as we found it. So we began to do research to understand what was the situation facing these older workers, and found the same thing that has been reported extensively, that when people over 55 leave the workforce, they are unemployed for a longer period of time.
You'll announce the winners of the New York Age Friendly Awards tomorrow. Are there different categories?
The Age Smart Employer Awards this year have four winners. This year, they're all in one category. But one of the important lessons that we learned this year is that if we have the opportunity to do the awards again, we'll have one category for large employers and one category for small employers, because large and small employers have different opportunities and options available to them to make their workplaces work for the four generations of people that are now working side by side.
So, listeners, we would love to hear from some of you on this, employers or employees or retirees, how have any of your workplaces been age smart or not? 212-433-2400. WNYC. What would you like to see as policies, physical plant, whatever, for older workers? Maybe you can suggest some criterion that will become, or criteria that will become awards categories in the future. 212-433-WNYC, or nominate a business you know for consideration for next year's awards. Large business, small business, medium business, 212-433-WNYC. From your experience as an older worker at a workplace or an employer who's been aware of managing a multi-generational workplace, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you want to get in on this. And I see, Dr. Finkelstein, that one of your positions is that people working longer is good for employers, for employees, and for the overall economy. Correct. How do you make that case as a value judgment?
We make that case in the following ways. First of all, if people stay working for a longer time, then they're contributing to the economy. They're spending more. They're less reliant on public benefits because they're continuing to earn income, and they're continuing to be job producers, which grows the economy. We have a misconception that jobs are a zero-sum game, and that if I have one, that means you don't. But in point of fact, employing some people is demonstrated to produce more jobs in order to employ others. So it's good macroeconomically. It's good for employees. The research is very clear that working is good for people's health. It's good for their social engagement. It's good for their connectedness. And it's good for employers. Research is expanding, showing that older adults are productive, are reliable, are conscientious, and are actually better than younger people in interpersonal communication skills. That would be person-to-person rather than machine-to-machine.
What's your reaction as a proponent of people working in jobs longer to the new Congressional Budget Office report on the Affordable Care Act, which we were talking about with Peter Coy from Business Week, which seems to suggest that older workers will retire a little earlier on average because they'll be more able to afford health insurance outside of work thanks to the exchanges?
Let me be very clear. We are not proponents of people having to work. We are proponents of people being able to work. And what the Affordable Care Act does is take another important step in untying insurance and employment, which gives people options and choices. And what is good is for people at all stages of life to be able to calibrate how much they want to be working and need to be working with their other responsibilities in their lives. A young mother, as you mentioned earlier, a person not well enough to be working full time.
As they get older. Does it take direct attention and effort for an employer to make a multi-generational workplace work well? Is it more than just not discriminating against older workers in the hiring or promotion process?
It is indeed. It takes clear intentionality. And what we found, we were enormously impressed by the applications that we had in New York, where we found workplaces, large and small, taking particular attention to make mentorship relationships between older and younger workers, to emphasize flexibility that allowed people to work as their life situation changed across the life course, to put particular effort into training workers of all ages about the skill set that they needed, to develop phased retirement that kept valued and talented workers in the workplace working as much or as little as they needed to, and even coming back after their official retirement to work on a per diem basis or even in their old jobs and a volunteer basis when that's what they want.
Carolyn in Nassau County, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to reiterate what she was saying. I was a psychiatric nurse. And I was able to cut back gradually for, I think it took about 5 years for me to go from full-time to part-time, eventually to per diem, where just before I retired at 67, I was only working maybe two shifts a week. And it was nice that it was gradual because it didn't make the sudden, you know, all of a sudden being cast out in the world made it easier.
And if you had health insurance without working full time prior to reaching Medicare age, do you think you might have done that phase down a little sooner?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you very much. Let's go to Chris. Chris, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Okay.
I wanted to throw this out there. I'm 55 years old. I've been taking care of my parents. My father passed away this past October, and I'm trying to look out for my mother, who has her own health problems. She's 92. And I have been working for about 4 years. What would you suggest for me to find something that I can do to support us?
Yes. One of the big challenges across the life course is the caregiving responsibilities, caregiving for children and then caregiving for parents, and the interruptions that it makes in work. Ways to try to get back into the workplace have to do with volunteering in an area of your interest. I know it's hard when you have those caregiving responsibilities, but it's
just... And also, honestly, economic responsibility.
Of course, of course. Yeah. It's a really challenging time in your life also to broaden the team. Often when we're in that primary caregiver role, we feel like we're the only one that can fulfill it. But sometimes if you reach out to other family members and other community resources, you find you can kind of share the burden and be able to do more yourself.
Do you feel you're facing workplace discrimination because of your age when you apply for work, Chris?
I'm sure so. I mean, I've got gray hair. I have long hair, which doesn't help me. But I also, you know, what I decided to do, I work with young people. I mean, this is kind of professionally what I do. And I've decided that, you know, I need to really invest time with people who I know, Bill Perkins, state senator, Jeffrey Canada, you know, works with the Harlem Children's Zone, Alfonso Wyatt, who works with the Fund for the City in New York, and go back to what I was doing before this period of time and just try to get in touch with them and see if I can make some connections to them.
Use your connections, that's for sure.
Exactly right.
Anything you would add, Ruth?
It sounds like you have good friends with a strong who have a strong vision of everyone's role contributing in a community, and that's what that you know. That's the vision of the future that we all need to share.
Chris, thanks for calling. Good luck. As we talk to Ruth Finkelstein, Senior Vice President of Policy and Planning for the New York Academy of Medicine. She directs the Age Smart Employer Awards program created by the Academy with the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. They'll present the first set of such awards at a ceremony here at the Green Space tomorrow. And I see you have a guest keynote from the new Speaker of the City Council.
That's great.
Melissa Mark Viverito. Why did you invite her in particular? If you know, I don't know if you were in on the invitation process, and is there anything you're looking for from City Council in terms of policy for age-smart workplaces?
Absolutely. Speaker Viverito has actually been a very strong supporter of the age-friendly initiative from its inception. She's our City Council person at the New York Academy of Medicine.
Upper East Side,
East Harlem. And she founded the first aging improvement district, where a neighborhood effort to bring the not the usual suspects together to promote healthy aging in the neighborhood. And so she's been a strong supporter all along. In her hands, we feel that the policy changes that will promote age smart employment will also promote fair employment for all, and we're really looking forward to continuing to collaborate with her on some specific policy issues, changes in pension calculations, and other things.
What's another thing? That one?
Well, the whole health and the relationship between Medicare, private insurance and work continues to be problematic and to create disincentives for employers to hire older workers, because Medicare isn't the first payer. The employer is, if the person works full time. And so this raises their costs needlessly. We'd like to see policy changed so that we reward employers for having older workers by having those older workers partly paid for by Medicare.
That's fascinating. That's a national policy. That's not something city council can do, right?
Very powerful city council, but yes.
And you cite strategies such as making design changes to equipment and training managers to lead multi-generational teams. Can you give me an example of one of those? Like, how about design changes? What needs to change in the workplace?
Well, there are great examples where companies have done this. So the classic example is BMW analyzed its plants and found one with more older workers and some declines in productivity. They went in and, in a collaborative effort with the older workers, redesigned the shop floor. Everything from changing the flooring to making some tasks group tasks instead of assembly line ones, changing the lighting, and raised the productivity back to exceed the standard that they were looking for. There's also job redesign, which is done in big employers like Marriott, where they go through and figure out wait staff and cleaning personnel and so on, how to redesign jobs so that people of all ages can do it. And we also have winners. Stay tuned tomorrow, streaming live on agesmartemployer.org. Winners who've done that locally. We've got a restaurant who had a bartender who was breaking glasses and not able to see anymore. Instead of letting him go, they made him the senior mixologist, and he trained everyone else.
Doris in Yonkers, you're on WNYC. Hi, Doris.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. This is just a little vignette. Years ago, and I don't work now, but years ago when I got tired of being retired, I was in the diner paying my check for lunch, and I said to the owner at the register, do you ever need a cashier? And he said, well, sometimes. Did you ever do this? And I said, no. I said, but I'm good with money, and I know how to work a register, and I'm good with people, and I won't get pregnant. And he hired me on the spot.
It's fabulous.
It is, except when employers avoid hiring younger women because they might get pregnant.
Of course.
Just had to throw that in there. So last thing, other than these awards, Doris obviously had a nice touch. You could tell right away she was good with people. That probably helped her get that job on the spot, that part-time job. So other than these awards, how do you convince employers not to ditch older workers or avoid hiring them? They so often see older workers as less flexible, less up-to-date on skills, more expensive because of health and because of seniority or expectations.
And so the strategy is to raise the visibility of productive, creative, successful older people and companies who hire and keep them, so that we can begin to change what is a set of misperceptions about the multi-generational workplace and replace it with the accurate perception that, in fact, these are creative, innovative, vital workplaces that can tap in to the growing consumer base of the silver economy. So we need to help employers recognize that this is in their interest.
Ruth Finkelstein, Senior Vice President of Policy and Planning for the New York Academy of Medicine. She directs the Age Smart Employer Awards program, created by the Academy with the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. They'll present the awards at a ceremony here in the green space tomorrow, including a keynote address by the new city council speaker, Melissa Mark Viverito, and streaming live. You said, I didn't know about that part. People can watch this on the computer if they're interested. What time?
The ceremony starts at 6:45, and should be over nice and promptly at 7:30.
At that web address again?
agesmartemployer.org.
Thank you for coming in.
Thanks.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we're compiling two lists about the Sochi Olympics, which are about to begin on Friday. And there's all this stress about whether they're ready. So we're going to compare our doesn't inspire confidence list and our maybe it'll be okay list. Stay with us.